Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Throughout my childhood, I lived in central Alabama. However, I have many stories along with my friends. This is just one of the stories I refused to talk about openly to my friends for many years, until I finally decided to share this spine-chilling story today on the show. The day was Saturday, November 8th, 1986. It was a cold evening in a small town called Stuart, Alabama, southwest of Talladega, Alabama. I was 15 and was walking down what at the time was a small dirt road called White Road with my golden retriever, Jack. The road was significantly more minor back then than it is today, so you would rarely see any cars. However, there is always this one old house, with one half of it made from wood and the other out of bricks. It's a very interesting looking house. It was about 30 or so feet away from the road. And it had a carport with what looked to be a black with a white stripe 1962 model Chevrolet Corvette. The house belonged to a lady who passed away in 1971. Now it belonged to her son, who lived up another mile up the road. I remember about a year or so before this occurred. I asked the man, who was in his 40s, why hasn't anyone gotten the Corvette? This man was excellent. He's given me old fishing lures and a tackle box before. But what he told me still gives me chills to this day. He said, "We would, but that Corvette is the same place Mom and my aunt died of a heart attack." I remember making a response something along the lines of, "I'm so sorry for your loss," or something along those lines. But then I dumbly asked him, "So, you want the car to stay in their memory?" He responded, "No, it's because I do not dare get near that house." I asked him why. And he never would tell me. And before I left, he said something like, "Stay away from that place. I don't want anyone else getting hurt." After that talk, I didn't even want to go around that house, as I had never really gone around that house but once or twice before. But one day, about a year after this, I decided to walk past it, and my curiosity got the best of me. Jack began to bark and growl, as I had never heard before. He had never done that time. He had also never done that in the times we had walked past it before. But it was different. The whole atmosphere was eerie. It was dark and cloudy that day, and rather cold. And it didn't help that we were surrounded by deep, thick woods for miles upon miles. So, we were smack dab in the middle of the Alabama wilderness. You see, the area has definitely developed more since then, but is still relatively rural. As it was getting later by the minute, Jack began tugging on his leash. So I slowly began walking over toward the house. Jack grew louder and louder the closer he got. Then, when we reached the Corvette, he stopped and started sniffing. I looked to my right to see a door that had fallen over, and I could see halfway into a very dark house, with what looked to be a broken mirror at the end of it. Jack walked to the other side of the car, and then turned his attention towards the door. It was almost as if everything froze. Jack didn't move for a solid 10 or 15 seconds. Before he let out the most profound, loudest growl I had ever heard in my entire life. I've never heard a dog make this noise before. It was so guttural and primal. He never barked, and he continued to growl and slowly began walking to the doorway. What seemed to be about 5 to 10 seconds between each step, he showed every single one of his teeth, with his eyes squinted. He reached the doorway, paused from the growling, and lunged forward with a leaping bark. I almost fell to the ground and barely hung onto his leash. He then barked repeatedly. I ran over to him, only to look up and see a figure in a white dress in that broken mirror, with distorted, wrinkly hands and very twisted long hair. I couldn't see it physically, but only in the mirror. I froze with shock and terror, blinking again and again, but the figure remained there. Blinking again and again, yet the figure remained there. I grabbed Jack's collar and ran off the porch with Jack behind me, back into the dirt road and into the wilderness. As everything got dark, I could barely see. After I got to the road, it sounded like two women were yelling, "She needs help!" I don't remember much after that. I just remember tripping and falling over a wooden bridge that crossed the small creek that I had to go over. I got back up, grabbed Jack's leash, and ran some more. I do not doubt that something would have happened if Jack and I had gone into that house. To this day, I dare not go down that road. Even though the man told me that he would finally demolish the house, I refused to go anywhere near it. I don't want anyone to have a similar experience. Only you know the words cannot begin to describe the fear when you see or hear a strange figure. Like I said, this place has been developed a bit since then, but it is still very rural, and there is still a lot of wilderness around. But I don't know, there's something about that place that was just evil. Hello, my fellow horror enthusiast. Let's start my story. I am 15 years old and this happened when I was 13. I live in Illinois, but this took place in Wisconsin. I will tell you the site's surroundings because it will be important later in the story. We own about 200 acres of land in Wisconsin. My dad and I hunt on it a lot. Most of this land is covered in trees. There is a small garage and house where we store our weapons and sleep. There is a small gate where you enter the forest, and that's where our story starts. My dad and me, we will call him Andrew, we enter the gate, and we hike for a few miles. Also, just to let you know, our land is joined by a forest that is larger than 200 acres. We hiked a few miles to our hunting nest in one of the trees, and we waited for an hour or two, and didn't see a thing. No animals, or anything. Only birds singing and squirrels hanging out. After another hour of waiting, everything suddenly goes silent, and if you know when there is a large predator around, other animals generally become quiet and leave the area, or hide. So we thought a bear was somewhere around us. Still, my dad told me bears don't live around here, so we questioned why it would be so silent. After about a half an hour of silence, I saw something I told my dad about, and he saw it too. I will give you the best description I can provide you. This thing, it was tall. It was about 7 or 8 feet tall, if I had to guess, and its arms, oh my god, they almost reached the ground. It had these small yellow eyes and a vast, gaping mouth. We were scared absolutely crapless, looking at it until it snapped its head and looked at us, and growled. We thought it was going to attack us at any moment. Still, it just kept looking at us, like it was determining if we were alive, or if we were food, or maybe something like that. But after it darted by us really quickly, we had to turn around slowly. When we looked, it was still staring at us, but only for a few seconds, until it zipped into the forest, and we didn't see it until again later. So, I and my dad contemplated what the heck we were going to do. We had no idea what we had just witnessed, and what type of creature this was. We had no clue. So we waited for a few hours until it got dark, and that's when we thought it was a good idea to get the heck out of there. We left our hunting blind and got back to our garage without incident, and we went to sleep. Still, after a few hours, we were woken up to a scratching sound outside. My dad said it was like a raccoon or something, but I wasn't convinced. I took my dad's rifle and Glock just in case, and I looked outside, and there it was, the same creature from before. So what I did was slowly crept away to go upstairs to the first place where we slept. But when I was walking upstairs, I stepped on a creaky board, and this creature heard it. It screeched and slammed into the door. I thought it was going to break through, but somehow it didn't. It just cried a few more times and ran away. So we called the police and told them what we saw, but the police just shrugged it off as our imagination. But I swear to God, my dad and me saw it twice, and we even showed them the scratches. They just searched the perimeter, and that was pretty much it. They said that they couldn't really do anything because, obviously, there was no body or no proof that this creature was even here. I'm going to that place to hunt again soon, but we will be armed to the teeth. My dad got me a Glock as a present, and my dad got himself two Mossberg 590 shotguns for me and him to be safe. Let's hope we don't see this creature again. I'll tell you about the results later. This story is about my brother's experience at Pocahontas State Park in Chesterfield, Virginia. I'll be telling it from his point of view. During a 6th grade field trip to Pocahontas State Park, I was at the back of the line of my fellow classmates as we were making our way down the trail through the woods. I started feeling a bit nauseous and a teacher noticed I was trailing behind slower than the rest of the class and offered me a soda to try to calm my stomach down. She told me to sit on a log right off the trail, sip on my soda, and rest for a bit, and she'd come back to check on me. She then jogged up to catch up with everyone else who had kept walking up the trail. I was sitting down at this point, alone in the forest. I heard a woman moan a few feet away from me. I looked up and couldn't believe what I was seeing. On a fallen tree just 10 feet away from me across the trail was a naked woman, lying on her side. Her skin was greenish-gray, and she had minor cuts that weren't bleeding. They were all over her body, from her neck to her chest. She had dark brown, dripping hair. It was dripping wet as she had just gotten out of the water. She was not translucent. She was as solid as the tree she was laying on. I rubbed my eyes because I thought I was hallucinating from sickness and looked again, and she was still there, looking right back at me. I stared at her for about a minute or two. I heard my teacher walking around the trail, coming to come check on me. So I looked left to see where she was, and when I looked back towards the woman, she was gone. I started shaking uncontrollably. My teacher saw me and freaked out, thinking I was going to have a seizure or that I was cold due to being sick. Eventually, she walked me back to the bus to wait on the rest of the group. I didn't tell her what I actually saw right away until about a week later. She searched online for any deaths that took place at the park, and lo and behold, she found an article about a woman in her 30s who was stabbed to death in the shower in 1986 by her boyfriend in one of those cabins, just about 50 yards from where I saw the naked green figure. I've experienced paranormal activity a lot, but that's the only time I've ever seen an apparition, and it scared me to death. My brother has told me many other stories, and every time I hear this particular one, it makes me freak out. If it were I that saw a naked, wet, stabbed green lady in the woods, I would have probably peed my pants right then and there. Hello, I'm going by Frederick. It's not my real name because I'd like to remain anonymous. I'm a male, and my age is not going to be disclosed to a bunch of strangers. I'm not entirely sure if I'm doing this submission thing right, but this happened to me a few days ago while on vacation to Texas. I'm not a great writer, so Swamp Dweller, please bear with me. So, for a while now, I've been interested in the paranormal, and stories about skinwalkers, wendigos, and fleshgates are my most favorite. So, for context, I went down to Texas from Minnesota for my older sister's wedding. The night after the wedding, I was at my cousin's with two of my older sisters and my little cousin, who we will call Maya. So, Maya wanted to play a game called Ghost in the Graveyard, which is essentially a hide-and-seek tag type game, very similar to Manhunt. A group of people counts while one hides. When you find the hider, aka the ghost, you yell, "Ghost in the Graveyard." And the ghost runs and tries to tag as many people as possible. I was the ghost, and the house was in the extensive driveway. To its left is a slight overhang and a giant grassy field, and to the right is my grandfather's workshop, and behind that was a very vast state forest. Their house is near the end of the garage and next to the forest. I was hiding in the side of the house, crouched down in a black hoodie and sweatpants, feeling all sneaky. After about 3 or so minutes of hiding, I heard plants being walked through coming from the forest to my right. I looked over, expecting a squirrel or something, one of my siblings, or maybe another family member. but there was something that I didn't expect. Now, I saw a white-tailed deer staring straight at me. Its neck was long like an elk, its mouth was hanging open, its teeth were sharp, yellow, and brown with reddish stains. It looked like they were rotting. It just stared at me, unblinking, and I stared back in fear. It was honestly a horrific sight, and I was about to pee myself as all the stories of not deer and skinwalkers rushed to my head. I got up and ran into the driveway, and my cousin saw and yelled "Ghost in the graveyard" and jumped onto the trampoline, which was the safe zone. But I did not care. I was crapping myself in the middle of the driveway, trying to escape this deer. I just said I was tired and went inside and laid on the couch, and we spent the rest of the night in there. The following day I went outside, and in the driveway there were so many dead rabbits out of nowhere. Their stomachs had been like ripped open, almost surgically, and their organs were gone. The brains and everything else were still there. I about threw up and I saw nothing more for the next 3 or so days that I was there. Thank you for sharing my story. It was a great stress relief writing this. I know it was short and to the point, but this is what I saw. If anybody has any idea if I saw a not deer or something else, please comment down below. I would love to know anybody's suggestions. Hey Swamp Dweller, I work at a state prison on the edge of a national forest in North Carolina. This place is home to murderers and other criminals, the worst of society. Anyway, the forest always gives off a creepy vibe, especially at night, the shift I currently work. I am a 50-year-old male who is comfortable in the woods and doesn't scare easily, but this forest does not feel right. I always feel like something is watching. I was doing a routine patrol around the outside fence this night. The fog was weighty, so you could only see about 5 feet in any direction. The usual forest sounds were making their concert like any other night. At the far point of the entrance, all went silent, which was noticed immediately. You could hear footsteps in the forest just inside the tree line, two-legged bipedal steps. Having grown up in the woods and being a retired Army Ranger, I am confident I can handle most situations. I caught a glimpse of something moving to my right, where the forest began. There were two amber eyes about 8 feet off the ground, and it let out a deep, guttural growl from the darkness. I was armed with a 12-gauge shotgun and a 9mm sidearm. Out of habit, I rack around into the chamber of the 12-gauge. The forest is full of deer, coyotes, wolves, and once in a blue moon, black bear. Not giving it too much more thought, I continued my patrol. Now, I should mention that the prison has guard towers about 300 yards apart, and there are 8 around the area, with a gravel path leading to each of them. This 8-foot thing steps out from the darkness behind me. I heard the heavy foot hit the gravel, and within seconds, it was on full-on run mode towards me. I ran for the closest guard tower, which was only about 20 feet away, stuck my keys in the lock, and snatched the door open. I dove inside just as the metal door slammed shut and this thing hits the door with all of its force, which shook the concrete of the steel tower. You could hear it snarling and hitting the door. I climbed to the top to get a look at what the hell just happened. I just caught a glimpse of it sinking back into the forest darkness. It was an 8-foot-tall, hairy-covered man, like some sort of creature with a wolf tail. I'm not sure what just happened. I called the commander on duty and asked him to drive around the tower. I wanted him to come pick me up because I was way too scared and I had turned my ankle and didn't want to walk back to the entrance. When he arrived, I heard him say in a loud voice, "What in all that is holy?" On the outer side of the metal door was a massive dent and a claw mark that had 4 distinct marks. Without a word, we got back in the truck and drove back to the prison entrance. From that point, foot patrol was turned into a driving truck patrol. So this encounter happened many years ago, and I was very young at the time. It was in 2001 or 2002, and I was 11 or 12. My uncle was interested in purchasing some land near Red Oak, Oklahoma. I do not know precisely where, but several acres were in a very remote area. My father, mother, and I decided to accompany him one Saturday to scope out the property. From our home, it was a little more than a 3-hour drive, but we all love riding in the car. So while it would not be the most eventful road trip, we went to get out of the house. Upon arrival, I remember being very underwhelmed by the place. There were no houses anywhere near, and hardly any signs of any life apart from a few birds, and the wooded area wasn't exactly what I would call picturesque. Still, we parked our car off the road to explore the woods a bit. My uncle was talking about buying the land for hunting, which is not my cup of tea. As we walked through the woods, it was a lovely day, but still something felt off. Everyone in our group remarked about the eerie feeling, but my dad and uncle laughed it off. My mom had goosebumps and kept looking over her shoulder, which made me on edge too. She was insistent that it was weird and wanted to leave, saying it felt like she was being watched. After a bit of hiking, I noticed a small red building. I've seen bigger storage sheds in suburbs, but it looked well built. My uncle said there was something weird about it, and there was nothing about it on the listing. So we went to peek inside. The door was open, and inside were open cans of food, a ratty blanket on the floor, and it stunk, unlike anything I'd ever smelled before. Following this discovery, we all agreed it would be best to return to the car. If there was some crazy hermit living in the woods, we didn't want to be around to find him. The only issue was, we had walked far into the woods and now weren't exactly sure which direction was correct. The eerie feeling excited, and we were all on edge. We ended up trekking another mile before we finally found the road. We were further down from where we had parked, but at least we could follow the road now. Walking along the road, we came across a genuinely unsettling sight. Right in the middle of the asphalt was a dark gray cat on fire. I have no idea why a cat was out in the middle of nowhere, or how it came to be killed and set ablaze. This had just happened, but there was no one in sight. Naturally, we ran the rest of the way to the car. There was a massive scratch in the paint down the side of it. Somebody had keyed it. Thankfully, that was the only damage. My dad was able to start it without any trouble, and we drove away as fast as we possibly could. My heart is sped up just recounting this moment, one of the scariest moments of my life. My uncle did not buy the land, and I'll never forget this terrifying encounter. Still, like anything, over time I pushed it to the back of my mind, and it just became one of those odd moments you occasionally recall and tell at a family get-together years later. It's almost like a funny story. I'm sharing this because I was reminded of it last night while binge-watching some episodes of an unsolved YouTube channel show, where they shared the story of a family that disappeared in the same area while also looking for some land for sale. The disappearance of the Jameson family is the name of the mystery in the video if you're interested. The family died in the same area we were searching, roughly 7 years after we made our trip there. There are many theories about their deaths, including allegations of some sort of cult in the area, complete with something about dead cats. Coincidence? Probably. But the whole story gave me chills. So if my family narrowly avoided being killed by some witches, a cult, or something else, or if we just stumbled upon a hermit who didn't want us in his woods. Years ago now, back when I was about 8 or 9, my folks and I lived in this huge, weird old house that was right at the edge of this small town in rural Pennsylvania. The local school districts also happened to be in the middle of this big restructuring. So even though I and my little brother were only a couple of grades apart, I went to an entirely different school and took different buses. This meant I was the last person to leave the house every morning, but also the first person to get home every afternoon, since my school was much closer than his. But this also meant that it was also my job to make sure all the lights were off and all the doors were locked when I left every morning to head off for school. So this one morning, I caught on to the fact that the light was on in the basement and that the door was open. So before I left, I saw to it that the light was off and the door was locked. Then later, when I got home that afternoon, I saw that the light was on again and that the door was open. I remember thinking that I was losing my mind or something, and that I had totally just imagined locking up. I mean, I was just tired most mornings after staying up late playing Overwatch, so it was not out of the question that I could have forgotten to do so. So I went over to turn off the lights and close the door. But when I got to the top of the basement staircase, I looked down to see what looked like a big shadowy figure of a male standing at the bottom. I just wigged out, slammed the door, and pushed a cabinet against it. Then I bolted to hide upstairs in my room. For quite a long time, I did not tell my family because I was positive what I had seen was a ghost and did not think anyone would believe me. A little explanation. It was about Halloween time. I was young and dumb and happened to have fostered a firm belief in the paranormal. Then about 6 months after that weird little incident, my mom and dad realized that things had been going missing around our house. They blamed me and my brother at first, but after we insisted we were innocent, we all walked around the place with flashlights trying to figure out how anyone might have gotten inside without breaking in. Turns out the thing I had seen in the basement was an actual dude, and he had been climbing in through a small hole in the outside of the house, working his way through a crawl space, then coming up into the house through the basement. Only now just realizing I had been alone in the house with him at least once was one of the worst, most terrifying realizations I had ever had in my entire life. I don't believe in ghosts anymore, but I damn sure am terrified of human beings.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey Swamp Dweller, I've been listening to your channel for some time now. I got to thinking about how a lot of strange and freaky things have happened to me over my lifetime. I grew up and currently live in a ridiculously small town in upstate New York. When I was a small child, I used to tell my mother about the man that came to play with me and talk to me at night. My dad was the only man around at the time and he worked night times. So, obviously, this freaked my mother out at the time as I was only 3 years old. As time went on, I remember always being afraid of my old bedroom. And then one day, after getting home from school, I called for my mother and I heard her say we are in here. So, I went to her room and no one was there at all. I thought it was strange, but whatever. I went to use the bathroom and I distinctly remember hearing a man's voice say my name. I of course told my mother this, and I continued hearing a man call my name throughout the years. Fast forward about 14 years later, and my sister was born. One night around a campfire sharing freaky stories, she said she always heard a man calling her name in the bathroom. My parents still live in this house, and to this day, my own son now is afraid of my mother's bathroom. I suffer from sleep paralysis, and every time I have paralysis, I see a man standing at the foot of my bed, watching me. I cannot help but wonder, is this the same man I have always heard and or played with when I was a young child? My friends and some family members have gotten into ghost hunting around the area. We have some incredibly old graveyards dating back to the 1700s and 1800s. There is one area in the woods full of graves most people do not know is there. We as kids discovered it walking and playing in the woods as kids usually do. We had an older friend who drove at the time. We will call him Jeff for privacy's sake. Jeff would always roughhouse and be crazy with his father's truck in these woods. His friend Alan was terrified of the woods late at night, especially the graveyard. We decided to play a prank on him, and being that we were now teenagers, we decided a perfect place would be the graves. So one night we drove him through the woods by the graves only to find the entire gravesite glowing and lit up. We were incredibly freaked out and continued driving into an open field where Jeff's truck stalled out on us. We were trying to get the truck started, but as we were trying to get it going again, we heard drums beating very close by. The sound of the drums sounded like it came from the graveyard. We finally got Jeff's truck started up and hightailed it out of there. However, when we passed the graveyard again, it was all dark like nothing was ever there. My friends and I decided to do some ghost hunting on a very haunted hill in upstate New York. There have been countless strange deaths that have occurred there. A long time ago, a witch doctor and her brother were hung in one of the trees that is still standing. I was unaware at the time that we were going to that location. I kept hearing what sounded like a rope swinging in the tree, but there was no rope at all. There was no wind or anything. It was just a calm, sunny summer day in upstate New York. Eventually, we happened upon the witch's gravestone. At this point, my friends tell me we are here, and then tell us all about her backstory. Honestly, I felt bad for her, so I decided to reach out and touch her grave. I instantly became incredibly dizzy. I almost threw up and fell to my knees. Upon research, I found out that I am not the only person who has had that happen to them upon touching the gravestone. We continue to ghost hunt, and we've gone there many times after this. There are miles and miles of forest there. One night we had decided to come back for a ghost hunt and do more of the trails that were in a different area, but still very haunted woods apparently. We had noticed that our cell phone batteries were draining rather rapidly. We thought this was odd. As we were driving, we became lost and unsure what trail we were on at this point. We stopped the car to figure out exactly where we were. As I stated above, a lot of people were losing their life in strange ways in this area. We have heard heavy footsteps approaching our car, but when we looked up and around, there was never anyone there. We had this gut feeling that was just terrible. We knew it was bad. My friend Jackie, for privacy's sake, looked out her window and started screaming. She said there was a man just looking in at her. We did not see him, but we did believe her. We then told her to gas it, as we did not care where we ended up. We just wanted to get away. As she hit the gas, my mother and I looked out the back window and saw what looked like to be a butcher following our car. I told my friend in the front seat who owns land there. She said there used to be a serial killer back in the day that lived in the area. One night, my friends and I decided to do even more ghost hunting, as I really appreciate a good ghost story. I thought I heard something walking toward me in the darkness, and I saw a branch move like someone was moving it out of the way. Everyone in the group was standing near each other, so we were like, feeling safe, you know? We decided to snap a picture with our digital camera, which by the way constantly dies in those woods for some reason. We caught a silhouette of a woman dressed in an old-fashioned style dress, with a child in her arms, and another child clinging to her side. Not too spooky, but pretty cool. We all went to another gravesite, looking for more ghosts, of course. I happened to be standing there with my mom and friends, who I always go ghost hunting with. I trust them and they trust me. We always have each other's backs. We had been standing there, and I thought I heard someone talking to me. So I stood still to listen. As I was standing there, it was like I was asleep while being awake at the same time. Like I was in some sort of trance. Like this very weird state. It was very strange for me. My friend decided to snap a picture, thinking I was just standing still looking for a ghost. The next thing I know, my friends are all running and heading for their car, and I'm just standing there still unaware that in the picture my friend snapped, there was a man standing at my shoulder, talking in my ear. Just typing this story gives me the chills. My mom ended up running back for me and dragging me out of my trance-like state. I had no clue the entire time that they had been yelling at me, as I had never heard them. I often dream of deceased loved ones and friends and stuff like that. Sometimes I even see my friend's husband who has passed. He has told me to warn my friend that something evil was watching her and wanted her. He said his son was buying a truck and to tell him to watch out for his mother as well. He said he had been trying to keep her safe, but this evil thing was stronger than he was. He told me it required a lot of energy to talk to me and did not have much time to talk. I reached out to my friend and she said, in fact, in the past 2 days her son was apparently going to buy a truck. She had also said she was having a lot of awful things happen to her, including a wolf showing up and being aggressive towards her. My friend has since moved farther away from that haunted hill. One day, I swear, I saw her husband as I was on a walk. He was just standing there with his arms crossed and a big smile on his face. He gave me a wave and a nod. Anyways, these are just a few ghost stories from my small town I have for you. I do have plenty more strange things that have happened to me, but I'll share that for another time. Hey Swamp folks, sorry to interrupt this episode, but this episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, I know it's been one hell of a year, and personally, we all feel like we've aged 12 years over the last 12 months. And if you're anything like me and tons of other guys, you're feeling your age a little more than you used to, especially in other areas of your life. And you know what? It's time to snap out of it. Spring is here and it's time to get sprung with Blue Chew. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in a chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. It ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is incredibly simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part? It's all done online. Blue Chew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. So, if you could benefit from a little bit of extra confidence, when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And even better yet, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code SWAMPED at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com code SWAMPED to receive your first month free. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this podcast. Once again, that's BlueChew.com using promo code SWAMPED. This story took place when I was a kid. My dad has been a pool man for many years. One of his oldest customers decided to purchase a ranch. I do not exactly remember where. He asked my dad if he could come fix their pool, which was disastrously maintained before he bought it. He gave my dad permission to bring us along and told us we were welcome to stay a few days to enjoy the ranch. We drove there and I had overseen reading the MapQuest instructions because I never seemed to be able to sleep during car trips. We drove back a few days later after my dad was finally able to save the pool. The drive home was awfully long. For long stretches, the view was mostly desert, farms, and the occasional small suburban town. Unlike me, my mom and brothers knocked out almost immediately, so most of the trip was just me and my dad talking or listening to music. I am also a very avid reader, so I had my book on my lap besides the maps. I remember the ride had been quiet for a while, because I had been reading. I had to stop because it was getting dark, and my dad only let me turn the dome lights to read the maps. No radio service and the Game Boy batteries had all died. All I had left to do was look outside. Suddenly, I spotted a very tall shadow on a roof. I realized there was a man who seemed to be wearing a hat, a bowler hat, or maybe a top hat style, and dancing and jumping from roof to roof of this suburban lot. Kind of like that scene from Singing in the Rain, which at that point I had never seen. It took a second to realize that it was not a normal thing to see. The houses were situated in such a way where they were way too far away for people to jump roof to roof. What scared me the most is how at the last house before a field, he seemed to turn around and sense me. He bowed and tipped his hat. Even though I could not see it, I could sense it smiling. All I felt was dread in my stomach. I turned to face my dad to see if he saw it, but he had been paying attention to the road like he should have been. When I turned back, I could not see the houses anymore. They were too far behind us. I never saw a face or any details. He was just a silhouette on the roofs. I remember feeling very afraid that it would follow us. That it could if it wanted to. I never saw something like that in our many trips ever again. Sometimes, I wondered if I imagined it. It just felt so real. The memory is so vivid as well, which always keeps me coming back to this. I am watching old musicals because the dancing reminds me of the way he moved. My name is Bree. I am a 21-year-old female and I live in a small town in northern Ontario. The stories I'm going to share all took place in a house my family and I lived in until I was 13 years old. None of these stories are in chronological order, due to how young I was when they took place. The first story I will share was with my younger sister, Mac, who was 2 years younger than me, and at the time, I was about 6 years old. We were playing outside one summer day. The wind was blowing particularly hard, and our mother was watching us from inside the house. To give a visual of the layout of our home and yard, our house was known as the Backward House, since it was built backward. So, our mother was able to watch us while doing dishes in the kitchen. There was also a massive hedge separating our house from the neighbor next to us, and there was a considerable distance between the hedge and our home. My sister and I were not playing any games, just running around and having fun as kids do. Suddenly, out of nowhere, I and my sister froze like statues. We both looked at each other and simultaneously looked at the space between our home and the hedge. To our surprise, there was a woman there. She was wearing a beautiful long green flowing dress and had equally beautiful, long, wavy red hair and was very fair. She seemed to float rather than walk and seemed fixed on where she was going. As quickly as we noticed her, she vanished into the basement wall of our home. My sister and I then took a look at each other and honestly, we both looked incredibly puzzled. I did not want to say anything to her at first, because my sister was known to copy me, and I did not want her to say she saw something just because I had. After a few seconds of silence, my sister with tears in her eyes said, "Did you see that?" All I could muster out was, "Uh-huh." We then ran to our mom sobbing that some old lady had just floated into our home. My mom, not wanting to scare us, said, "Maybe it's your guardian angel, stopping by to make sure you're okay." That seemed to ease our nerves a bit, and we were soon back to playing around like nothing had ever happened. As I got older, the experiences in that home seemed to become more sinister. My bedroom had been moved into the basement, and I remember regularly seeing a dark shadow crouch in the corner of my bedroom at night. I had nightmares every other night, and had a constant feeling of being watched all throughout the house. My mother would later admit to me, once we moved out, that she was even afraid to walk around the house at night, and fears something being around the corner. Another story I remember vividly involves my brother who is 7 years younger than me. My brother Gio at the time was about 2 years old. We were sleeping together. It was extremely late at night and for some reason, I just could not fall asleep. To this day, I do not know if he woke up or said this in his sleep, but out of nowhere he says, "Bree, Bree, do you see it?" "See what?" I reply. "The eyes," he whispered. "What eyes?" I asked, to which he points behind the door. Obviously, at this point I'm crapping my pants. I try getting him to repeat what he said, but there was no reply. I quickly picked him up and brought him into the living room with me, where we both slept on the couch. I have many other stories about this house, but I will end it on this one. I remember somehow, I built up the courage to play downstairs by myself with my littlest pet shops. I was in my toy room that was attached to the laundry room in my dad's workshop. I had set up all my things in a little circle to make a town, and I was sitting in the middle of it. At the point this had happened, I was sitting facing the houses that were up against the wall. The light in the room I was playing in was placed above and behind me, so if someone walks in the room, a shadow would be cast on the wall I was facing. So as I was playing, I had an overwhelming urge to look up. When I did, I witnessed a shadow move from the right of me to the left of me, heading out the door into the rec room. My first thought was, well, maybe my dad was in his workshop and I didn't know. So I look up and out the door and there is no one there. I look back down at my toys and realize my dad is a bigger guy, and I would have heard him walking, and I would have seen him in the time I saw the shadow looking out the door. I book it up the stairs and get the hell out of that basement. As I said, I have tons of more stories that I will submit in the future. Thank you for sharing my story, Swamp Dweller. And if anybody in the comments has had any similar experiences, definitely let me know. This story takes place the summer of 2001 in a small town outside of Rhode Island, where I am from. I'm a female, for reference, and I was about 20 years old that summer, in between my junior and senior years of college at the University of Rhode Island. I decided to stay on campus and take some classes so my senior year would be a little lighter and be a bit less stressful for me. So I rented out a cute little apartment with a few friends, and we loved it. Like I said, we were in a small town outside of the city. There were a lot of other college students around, and I enjoyed living so close to the beach in the summertime. My schedule was pretty open, so even though I was working and going to school part-time, I had a lot of time to myself and loved the freedom I had to do whatever I wanted. I have always been into fitness and exercise, and one of my favorite things to do that summer was take my rollerblades to the local bike path and listen to music on my earbuds while I glided down the long straight path. Every day, I would drive to the bike path and park my car at the park close by the path and rollerblade the mile-long path until it ended. Another park would begin actually right after this one ended. At that second park, I would sometimes rest on one of the benches and take a little break and drink some water before turning back and going back down that same path again and ending up at the original park where my car was. It's about a 2-mile go, and I did this about every day. It was fun and great exercise, right up until this incident I'm about to chronicle for you. On this particular morning, I slept in and was running a little bit late, getting ready for my daily workout. I could not find my earbuds anywhere. They were not where I normally left them on my kitchen counter, and after spending some time looking for them around the apartment without any luck, I just said screw it and decided to exercise without them. I get to the park and put my rollerblades on and start my first mile. It was a beautiful July morning, and I was enjoying myself when suddenly, unexplainably about halfway through the mile, something felt very wrong. There was just this gut feeling that something was off. The temperature was in the 80s, but I had goosebumps all up and down my arms and legs. The hair on the back of my neck was standing up, and I had an intense, sinking feeling of dread. I've always had a very strong intuition. I trust it with my life. I felt this feeling before in the past, and it has always served as a warning. But I kept on skating, becoming very aware of my surroundings as I did so. Fight or flight was kicking in, and I didn't even understand why. That was until I saw him. There was a man up ahead on the trail, off the side of the path. The first thing I realized was that he was taking steps backward off the path. He was trying to hide from me in a tree, but I could still see his face from a good distance away watching me, like a dead-eyed predator. He stood there with his hands in his front pockets, not moving at all. As I skated closer to him, the dread in my stomach grew. I noticed he was not wearing workout clothes. He had an oversized hoodie, jeans, and work boots, nothing you would wear if you were expecting to exercise. Now, I had to quickly make a choice. Do I stop and turn around and go the way I came from, possibly endangering my life by losing the speed and momentum I had gained? Or do I keep skating past him and hope he doesn't rush me from the side, pushing me off the path? The fear I felt turned quickly to rage. Quick backstory on me. I am no stranger to violence and assault from men in my past. I thought, why should I live my life afraid? Why should I cater to these men who think they can just take what they want from me? Do they think I'm just going to keep taking it? I felt my hands ball up into fists, my jaw jut out in defiance, and I decided I was standing my ground. Something told me that as I passed him that I needed to remember everything about what he looked like. I noted his dark eyes and beard. I noted his plain blue baseball cap, his hoodie, his jeans and construction boots. I could tell you my nostrils were flared and my eyes were flashing anger, and I glared at him with an intensity that said, "I see you there, and I'm ready to fight you if need be." We maintained eye contact for what felt like a long time, but could not have been more than just a few seconds. Then he actually broke eye contact, looked away from me, and I knew he had changed his mind at this point about whatever he was considering doing to me, but I was still not safe yet. I flew as fast as I could to the second park and got off the bike path. Now, I was in a tough position. My car was a mile away, as was my shoes and cell phone. I could not go back down that path again and risk passing him a second time. He might have moved. He might have been hiding in a better place waiting for me, knowing I would need to go down that path to get to my car again. So I took off my rollerblades and made my way over to the road that ran parallel to the path and walked the mile back to my car in my socks, carrying my skates. It probably looked a bit strange to the drivers that went by, and the walk seemed to take forever. Once I saw my car, I ran to it as fast as I could and locked myself in. I never went back there to rollerblade ever again. Unfortunately, the story doesn't just end there, though. After this incident, I went on with the rest of my day. I went to class, I made lunch at my apartment, I got ready for work, and went to my closing shift where I work as a waitress. I returned to my apartment complex at around 10 p.m. to find my neighbor yelling excitedly on his cell phone in the parking lot, pacing and smoking a cigarette as he talked. He and his girlfriend lived upstairs from me. I didn't know them well, but they were friendly enough. She studied nursing and he was a business major. We had all hung out shortly after move-in day, drinking beers and smoking joints on their balcony, and I thought they were both pretty nice people. I parked my car and started walking towards the building just as he was hanging up from his cell phone. I nodded politely towards him, and he offered a friendly greeting, something like, "Hey, how's it going?" Seeing his face closer now under the lights, I could tell he had been crying. He told me his girlfriend was in the hospital. She had been attacked and violated by a strange man, and was recovering from some various injuries. Most seriously, a head injury from smacking her head on the concrete. As he described to me what happened, I felt tears rising in my own eyes and it felt like I had been punched in the stomach. What I said to him next made his jaw drop. I said, "Did that happen on the bike path?" He incredulously said yes and demanded to know how I knew that. I told him I knew who did it, and I explained what happened to me that morning. He immediately asked if I could talk to the police and give a description of the man. Because of the little voice in my head that told me I needed to remember everything about his appearance, I was able to give a full detailed description of this man to the police. For months after this incident, I checked the news to see if he was ever caught, but I never heard that he was. The girl he attacked did make a full recovery, and shortly after returning from the hospital, she and her parents showed up in a moving van and packed up all her things in her apartment. I never saw her again. For a long time after that, I felt a lot of guilt about what happened to her. I felt that somehow her fate was meant for me, but I skirted it and left it for someone else to suffer through. What did I do to ward off this attack? What did I do that she didn't? The last and most chilling piece of this story, though? The earbuds that I lost the morning of this incident. The ones I looked all over my apartment for and that I had decided to forego using that day because I didn't have the time to look. I found them the next day on the kitchen counter, exactly where they were supposed to be. I know for a fact they weren't there when I looked, and I cannot explain why they disappeared that morning. I know my roommate didn't take them. I can only suppose that my awareness of the situation was the thing that saved me in the end, and some higher power was looking out for me that day.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
I'm not incredibly good at writing, so I apologize if this is not as good as the other stories you've read. However, I would love it if you would read this on the show, as it is probably a surreal experience hearing my story. Anyways, I do have an account to share, so I like going on hikes with my friends in the summer to a creek behind our house. On the way to the creek, there was always a cement building. It is not exactly a building, more like a big cement box. There is no doorway, but it is decently sized. Maybe the size of an RV or taller. We have never thought much of it. You find all sorts of odd things in the woods. One time, in the early summer, like June, my friend decided to do a more in-depth look around. We just finished watching an episode of Stranger Things, which at the time we thought was super scary, so we were in the mood to find something spooky. First, we checked around the cement rectangle and found a small slit at the bottom in the back. It looked like one of those small narrow windows that you would find in basements. We dug in the dirt until we had a big enough opening to squeeze through. When we got in, we started realizing our situation. We were in a concrete box with a tiny rectangle hole that took us 15 minutes to get through. My friend even started hyperventilating, so we decided to call one of our friends just to lighten the mood. So we called and showed him the box, and after about 5 minutes of talking to him, he suddenly said,
"Get out of there now."
My stomach dropped, and I could feel myself getting pale. We hurriedly made our way out. I say impatiently, but it was probably 5 to 10 minutes. When we made it out, we asked our friend what he saw. We thought he was pranking us, but he's not that type. He is the kind of friend that laughs at every one of your jokes. He said he saw a dark figure hunched over in the corner. We told him it was impossible. We looked around the whole room and didn't see anything. He described it as just a pitch black figure hunched over in the corner. Like how you think that SCP-096 monster would look. I do not know if this was a practical joke, which you probably think it is. But I know our friend better. He said he didn't even see a passing glimpse. He just saw it or him. There was nothing in the box, nothing to mistake as a person. We have never visited that box again and never plan to. Unfortunately, I have no contact with either of them because that was a year ago, and I have moved. Thank you for reading my story if you choose to. Hello, Swamp Dweller. It's Vince again. I hadn't planned to write you again, but after the positive reviews and my friends continuing to encourage me, I decided to write you again. I'm going to share with you and your viewers of one of the most bizarre experiences I've had while hunting these creatures. I know my stories are a bit different than the usual stories you receive, but I hope you still enjoy it. So this takes place a few years after the previous story I sent in. I had been on a few successful hunts and had learned a decent amount about these things. I'd see a comment that called them Gugwei, so I will use that term from here on out. It's nice to have a name to these things regardless if it's right or not. So, I had killed a few of these Gugwei, but hadn't seen any in a few months. I believed I had run them out of the area and didn't really know how to find them again. I had the idea to use the BFRO website to look up sightings that may match the behavior of the Gugwei versus a regular Bigfoot. After searching for I don't even remember how long, I finally found a sighting from around Connor, Montana, about a shorter Bigfoot climbing into a tree. Finally, I thought. It made sense to me that the Gugwei would travel further north away from the area that I was in. I called my boss saying I was sick and I needed a few days off, packed my gear, and took off for Montana. It wasn't an overly long drive, and I was in Connor by the end of the day. I knew by then that they moved primarily at night and did not want to be making my way into the mountains in the dark where they had the advantage. So I stayed in my car that night and set off in the morning to the area of the sighting. It was around mid-May, so the weather was fairly nice, and I enjoyed the hike into the backcountry. I made it to the area by noon and had begun scouting for any signs. I learned to look for subtle things like branches broken too high up to be from an elk or a moose, or scratches in the bark too high up to be a bear. I wasn't having any luck finding anything and spent the next few days roaming the valleys looking for anything and spending the nights up on the ridges out of the trees. Being May, I didn't need to build a fire, so I would sit up at night looking down into the valley with my thermal scope, while wrapped in an insulated blanket to hide my shape. One night I saw a sow grizzly with two of her cubs, below me into the valley. I remember thinking to myself that the odds of the Gugwei, who I believed to be an apex predator, and a grizzly, who I knew was an apex predator, being in the same area was extremely slim, and decided to move the next valley over the following day. As they disappeared into the trees and out of view, I scanned back to my left and saw a flash of orange in the trees about 300 yards below me. I focused on the area but couldn't find what it was again. I scanned right back in the direction of the grizzly and could see the mother had come back where I could see her, and she was standing up sniffing the air, staring in the direction where I had seen the flash. The mother bear had to be close to 7 feet herself and was at least 600 to 700 pounds easily. I thought to myself that there is absolutely no way that a Gugwei was going to try this bear. As I had that thought, I scanned back to the left and could see between the swaying of the trees and their cool blue branches that a fire-red heat signature was showing through. It was roughly 20 feet up the tree and 50 yards from the mother bear. Was I about to see this? I remember thinking. I scanned back to the bear, and she was now facing the opposite direction. I looked that way again. I saw red showing from between branches in that direction as well. There were two Gugwe on either side of the bear. They were hunting her or her cubs. Back to the bear, I could see she was still standing, but both cubs were now at her side, and she was looking back and forth. I was in shock at this point. I had my suspicions about how they hunted, but this was showing an unnerving level of confidence and intelligence. The Gugwe, to the bear's right, began screaming in a blood-curdling way that made me want to drop my rifle and cover my ears. But I stayed on the scope. The bear reacted exactly how you would think and turned to its right, dropped to all fours, and positioned itself between the Gugwe and its cubs. Something told me to scan left, and I could see the Gugwe in that direction moving from tree to tree closer to the bear and its cubs until it was only a few trees away. It was still 15 feet up the tree, and Gugwe on the right was shaking the tree it was in to distract the mother bear. The closer Gugwe dropped out of the tree onto the ground and tried to grab one of the cubs, but the sow was too fast. It reacted before the Gugwe could react. The bear and the Gugwe were fighting when the second Gugwe dropped from the tree and charged over, hitting the bear from behind. She turned to it and was about to stand when the first Gugwe jumped back onto it. It was a two-on-one fight, and the bear couldn't focus on one without the other attacking it. I was frozen in place watching the mother bear try to fight off the two Gugwe and protect her cubs. She was trying her best but couldn't seem to stay on one long enough before the other made an attack on her and tried for her cubs. It was heartbreaking to watch. Finally, something in me snapped awake and I realized that this bear wasn't all that different from me. If I had gotten to my daughter that day, I would have fought just as hard as she is now. In a weird way, I was watching what would happen to this bear. This filled me with an intense sadness, and that was almost immediately replaced with rage. I wouldn't sit by and watch what happened to me happen to this bear. Some people would argue that what I was watching was just nature, but these Gugwe are not part of the natural order. I don't know exactly what they are or what part they play, but I do know it's not natural. I put my crosshairs on the Gugwe, calculated it was about 325 yards, and sent a round into its center mass. The loud shot echoed over the valley, and I could see it lurch back from the hit. I pulled the trigger again and sent another round into its chest, 2 for 2. The other Gugwe must have noticed its partner was hurt and made the fatal mistake of taking its eye off the bear. Now it was one-on-one, and the mother bear was going to make this Gugwe pay for attacking its cubs. The enraged mother never lost focus or even reacted to my shots, and as the Gugwe shifted its focus to its partner, the bear was on it. She had it on the ground and was thrashing it back and forth before it pushed itself away and managed to get back onto its feet. It looked to be the same height as the bear, and I could tell the bear had done some damage by its stance. The mother bear charged it again and the Gugwe tried to run to a tree, but the bear was too fast. I watched as the bear hit it from behind, and as soon as the Gugwe was on the ground, the bear had attacked the back of its neck, in her mouth, and had began to shake it with more violence than I had believed was even possible. It became clear to me that when one-on-one with a grizzly, it could get the best of these things easily, which made sense why they stayed further south away from the grizzly's range. I watched the grizzly finish off the Gugwe, and then go investigate the one I had shot. I could tell it was still alive, and obviously, so could the bear. The Gugwe didn't stay alive much longer. Once the mother bear was satisfied that the two Gugwe were no longer a threat, she retreated into the dense forest with her two cubs. My adrenaline was coming down at that point, and I was becoming incredibly tired. I wanted desperately to look closer at the Gugwe, but had no idea where the bear had gone and had no intention of becoming the next target of her protective instincts. I decided I would crawl into my tent and investigate in the morning. I awoke not long after daybreak and looked where the Gugwe should have been, but they were gone. I don't think the bear came back and dragged them off, and I know they were dead, so there must have been another one that took them away, just like the others I had killed. From my experience, once one was killed, the others in the area would leave, and with two being killed in one night, I was sure if there were others, they were long gone, so I decided to call it quits in that area. I was out of that area and back home by the next day, and I'll never forget that night. Watching the mother grizzly fight made me realize that the natural world had already been fighting back against these things long before I arrived, and it would be fighting long after I have stopped, and I believe that the natural world would win. I just hope I'm still here to watch the last Gugwe die. Whether it's by my rifle or by a grizzly's bite, both are fine by me. Hi, Swamp Dweller. I just want to let you know that this podcast rocks and I hope it stays up for years to come. While listening to one of your latest episodes concerning crime, memories popped up in my head about the times me and my brother would hike together. For context, I live in Phoenix, Arizona, and tried to escape the city life on the weekends by hiking in the mountains, exploring old sewage systems, and, my favorite, taking trips down into the Rio Salado to explore the swampy desert habitat and see what has changed. Things have changed since I last went, and now I don't really want to go back at all. It was a moderately warm Sunday when we set out to hike down the rocky trails. I had just gotten my driver's license and was excited to go driving off places by myself. Luckily, I wasn't alone this time, though. As I have said, my two brothers were with me, and I was grateful for it because things had changed. As we continued down the trails, I realized that the amount of trash had doubled. Plastic bottles, Safeway bags, and every possible litter imaginable was strewn about and dried in the riverbed. In the past, we had tried to clean some of it up, but now it would be pointless unless we had an entire team on the job. Further down the trail, a ranger came walking up. She turned into our trail and then walked across it into another, heading towards a homeless man that was... I don't know what he was doing. A tent was set up and he was kicking around some trash. She talked to him for a little while before departing. She headed back up the trail, going right past us, while the homeless man disappeared over a giant mound of dirt. Another homeless man had set up his tent nearby and he was eyeing us. He vanished into his tent, and we decided that it was best to leave this area. We hiked back the way we had came and left the trail farther back, which led us to the riverside. There we found an aluminum can with a lizard trapped inside of it, portraying how this pollution was affecting the environment. I've come across several of these situations down here. Once, it was the same can design and same lizard species. Weird, but we ended up slicing open the can to release him, because the opening was too small for them to squeeze back through. But as we sauntered down the riverside, we came across another tent and a mound of toilet paper and human feces. We turned back and decided to head back down the river again, but we ended up running into another homeless guy on the other side of the river, washing himself and drinking. We soon left and went back up to the main trail, hiking past the mound of dirt. The first homeless guy had walked all the way around it and ended up making his way back up the main trail. My teenage brothers are usually careful and don't mess around, but this time the youngest one climbed up to the top of the dirt mound and looked down. "Hey, there's a tent down here," he said. "Get down," said my other brother, but he didn't. Instead, he continued down towards it, not even sure if someone was in there. "Get your ass down here," I whispered fiercely. Since we were underneath a giant bridge, my voice echoed. My brother took no head. Instead, he picked up a rock and tossed it toward the tent. That was it. I marched up the mound and yanked my brother down, pushing him aside. He got really pissed at me, though. But he was being an idiot. Tampering around with homeless people's tents? Time to get to higher ground, I thought. Then maybe home, especially after that had happened. We continued upwards and found many more tents and piles of pornographic magazines and rusty needles. I hoped that if we got into a confrontation with one of these homeless people, he would let us pass. But many years had passed since I had explored this part, so things were much different now compared to the last. As we reached a cluster of mesquite trees, we saw another homeless man, except it wasn't some short guy in a tent. This guy must have been 6'4", and he was no stork. He was well-built and muscular. He glanced toward us, then disappeared. But I had my head turned and didn't see which direction he went. But I knew it was time to go, especially with another homeless man slowly gaining on us. We fled into the brush, which had many tent-like structures slung over branches. But surprisingly, there wasn't really anybody there. This labyrinth of polluted brush with a thorny canopy overhead went on for quite some distance. But that's when we heard something following us. I turned to my brothers. "Did you hear that?" They both nodded. Probably just thinking it was a rabbit or something to rationalize things in our brain so we didn't freak out further, we continued to crawl through the thorn bushes. But whatever was making those noises was getting closer and louder. I was pretty sure that it wasn't a rabbit at this point. It was big, much bigger than a coyote. It sounded like a human being, and it was crashing through the brush, getting faster and more intense. We could hear the footsteps in the dry leaves behind us. "Run," I whispered, and we crawled, ran, squeezed, and scratched ourselves as we retreated blindly into the briars and bushes. Whatever it was had gotten even closer and louder. At this point, we had our knives pulled and were getting tired. If this person caught up, it would be our last resort, and we were ready.
There!
One of my brothers pointed. The bushes began to clear, and there appeared to be a way out of this dangerous maze. We literally threw ourselves out and scrambled up the side of a slanted boulder wall to escape the stalker. As soon as we made it out into the clearing, the guy had stopped his pursuit and crashed back through the brush. When we saw the park ranger's truck parked further down the trail over the wall, we knew we were safe again. But we didn't report anything to her. I mean, who would believe us? Instead, we trekked all the way back up and ran across the parking lot, piling into our Ford Focus. I haven't made any recent trips there to go hiking, and I don't plan on hiking there anytime soon.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
I've never really had paranormal experiences, but I cannot explain this one. I'm in college, and me and some friends, seven people to be exact, from my school went on a hiking trip. We had two experienced leaders. We drove to Zaleski State Park, which is in the Appalachian region of Ohio. It was early April this year, and it was cold, and everything was still dead from winter. After hiking miles into the forest, we set up camp at the backpacking campsite, and there were a couple of other groups of people there as well. A few of them were friendly older couples, and then two college-age girls. Everyone was pretty spread out from each other. We set up camp further away from everyone else. I have always been able to sense energies of places, and the energy in this area was not good. It was almost spooky. Each of us had individual one-person tents, and we formed kind of a cluster in this site, with my tent being in the back, so no one was behind me. Our cluster was also right next to the forest, because this backpacking site was like a big cleared-off square in the middle of trees. Fast forward, I'm dead asleep around 2 a.m., and I wake up to leaves crunching right behind my tent. I hear footsteps walking in circles around my tent, and they sort of have a heaviness to them that couldn't be a deer or a dog, and it also sounded like it was just two legs. I cannot make this up. This creature or person was circling my tent for very long periods of time, slowly creeping up to the sides of my tent, and then just stopping. It would sound like they were there just breathing outside of my tent before it would pick up and start walking again. I could very clearly hear a human being breathing from the mouth, or something that was very similar to a human being breathing from the mouth, like a light sort of heaving almost. I was shaking, too scared to unzip my tent and investigate. I kid you not, this occurred for hours on end, and it seemed like I was the only one awake. Out of nowhere, I see an illuminated light shape from my tent, although I couldn't tell what it was from inside my tent because it was all zipped up. It was like a warm glow and it didn't move, like a flashlight would. I was paralyzed in fear. I simply couldn't believe it was an animal. At some point, I fall asleep due to sheer exhaustion, but I could hear the footsteps circling until I did. In the morning, I questioned my fellow campers and hikers about it, and my leader admitted she heard the footsteps and noises as well, admitting it was bizarre, and she would have investigated had she not been so groggy. One of the boys in the group said they also noticed the light that came on, but thought it was someone else in the group. Not a single person in the group went up to go to the bathroom or turned on a light that night. I've heard things about the Appalachian regions being creepy and bizarre, and now I 100% believe it. I've leaned towards Bigfoot, because apparently he is associated with light orbs, but I've never been a Bigfoot believer. But I'm telling you, this didn't feel like just any other bear. I was hunting for black bear one day, back in the early 2000s. The area I was hunting in was northern Clinton County. It's quite a hike to get to where I need to be. My ex-brother-in-law and I enjoyed the area and spent many a season scouting and hiking these lands before it was time to hunt. This part of the county is filled with long hollows, steep inclines, and hard-to-access trails. We both like to do our own thing and hunt on separate terrains. I would often dive down into the hollows while he scoured the ridgelines, hoping to get a shot at whatever I pushed over the tops. We both carried pretty bumped up two-way radios to keep up general idea of where we both were, although often the terrain made it too difficult for good reception. This day was a typical Pennsylvania bear season day. It was on the Wednesday of the season, third to last day of the brief season it was back then. The woods were quiet, with no distant whooping or yodeling of various opening day camps pushing drives through the woods. The weather was cold, gray, and windy when we separated to begin our hunt and continue throughout the day. I spent the day still hunting down this long hollow south of a little town in north-central Clinton County with the idea of meeting my brother-in-law at the top of a ridge that we agreed on, sometime around 4 p.m., giving us plenty of time to hike together the next few miles back to his truck. After hunting all day, I found an old game trail that appeared to meander its way back to the ridge line towards where I knew he would be waiting for me. After close to an hour, maybe around 3:30 or so, I made my way two-thirds of the way to the top, stopping often, scouring the slope for that jet-black fur of a roaming bear. Along the trail, I came upon a long-ago-used fire ring. It was very rudimentary in its build and appeared to be used maybe one time. The ring's rocks were covered in lichen, and only about the faintest of traces of black from a long-ago fire. I found it odd that a fire ring would be here, considering the steepness of the slope, but it was very small and somewhat of a level edge. There, I figured I would sit and eat the rest of my packed food and sit still, hoping to catch a final chance to see a bear. All the while, it felt odd, somewhat unwelcoming, like I shouldn't be there or something. I almost felt like I was a forbidden interloper on someone's valued quote-unquote spot. I sat for maybe 20 minutes and thought that it was time to continue my trek upward towards my friend. As I stood up, I slung my backpack on and reached down to sling my rifle over my left shoulder. As I stood up, I heard my name called loudly. It didn't really sound like it was behind me, rather all around in my head. Just as I was going to turn around, my rifle was slapped off my shoulder. I felt the force, heard something slap against the wood of the stock, and crouched quickly to save my gun from dashing to the rocks. I grabbed it in the nick of time and quickly turned around with a mouthful of profanities, for whom I thought was going to be my brother-in-law jacking with me. There was nobody there at all, though. Absolutely no way anyone could have rushed off without me seeing or hearing them. I felt a sick feeling in my churning stomach, chills throughout my body, muttering a few Hail Marys, and sped up to the top of the ridge, met my brother-in-law, and quietly we hiked our way out of the woods to his truck in the spreading dark of evening. This has bothered me for years, and I have not been back in those woods ever since.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.